It's a grand slam for Ian Happ.
What a play, Ian Happ, into the ivy.
And Dakota Meckes.
6'7", 250-pound Meckes. Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Welcome back to the Compound Podcast. This is episode 258, 258 of the Compound Podcast, presented by Parse Rum. Our friends at Parse, your friends at Parse. Go to Benny's, pick up your Parse. Go to your local Benny's. Whatever one's close to you, get your Parse. Send us a picture. We will tweet it out. Going to have, hopefully we'll have some Parse at the live show. I don't know. Live show, May 31st, 7 p.m. PCA is going to join us, Music Box Theater. Tickets, musicboxtheater.com. Tom's tweeted out the link. I've tweeted out the link. Tweeting it out and putting it out there. I think the Cubs are going to help us. Marquee's going to help us. Everyone's going to promote it. So come see the live show May 31st, 7 p.m. Music Box Theater. What are your touching points?
We should start with how are you feeling?
Yeah, not great. The IL is a frustrating thing. I haven't been really fortunate in my career to not be on the IL only one other time. And so pretty frustrating. Something that's just really... I hate missing games, hate not being available. And the right thing to do was to give it the time. And it's just a scary spot on the body that's easy to make worse. And so giving it the time to get it right and be available for the rest of the year is the most important thing. And I hate it, but I had to do it.
I will say, like you said, it's just an area of injury that, like, especially if someone that swings a bat, it's so easy to re-injure that or make it worse. So it's something where you take care of it now and hopefully it's not something that lingers throughout the year, you know? Like, it sucks that you got to go on the IL, but I feel like this was probably, and you said it, like, when I first texted you about it, like, it was probably the best course of action to take a few days, see if it was something where it's like, oh, like, just a little tweak, I'll be good in a day or two, or if it's something worse. So hopefully, you know, by the end of the IL stint, you'll be right back in there. We'd be ready to roll.
Yeah, the toughest thing is you can't simulate game speed. Like, can't simulate taking a full
pack.
Like, you can't simulate the check swing. Like, that stuff is what really can get it. And so you try to do your best to simulate and see how it feels, and just couldn't get it to a point yesterday where it made sense to push it any longer.
And so is it your left or right one?
Left. So being able to backdate the IL stint and get it to where you're only missing, you know, it's going to be 9 games because we have an off day in there, but you're missing 9 and you're able to get back out there. So
maybe we just have you hit righty. I guess you still feel it righty a little bit. I was trying to simulate two different swings. I was like, you still kind of feel it both sides.
Yeah. Just take the time, get it right.
We should mention that last week we recorded on Monday. Episode didn't come out until Wednesday. On that Monday, I may or may not have chirped you for not hitting a lot of homers so far in the year. And you proceeded to, that very evening, hit a home run. So I would like to personally take credit for that and say you're welcome.
I appreciate you. Yeah, I appreciate you. And thank you for motivating me. Really felt great. It was good. Nice to hit a homer. Ooh, Cubbies. Tough couple series last week against some good teams. Giants, Mets, both really good teams, bullpens, really good bullpens, and just like what Mets are doing from a pitching staff standpoint, like, I think their team ERA is like sub-3. Nice to get a win last night and start the homestand off right.
Your guys' strength of schedule has, like, to this point in the season, has to be number one. It's been insane. You've been playing like just all of the best teams one after another. So it's even more impressive your record right now with facing all the best teams in the league.
Yeah, I think just, you know, we played a lot of really good teams, a lot of teams that are top of the division are competing for that. So it felt good to, you know, kind of get through that. I think we played really good baseball. And like, even those games that we, you know, a couple of those series that we lost against the Giants and the Mets, like, we were in those games, we were right around it. And like, a couple of them could have gone either way. But yeah, I think kind of the complete baseball we've played. And then you saw it last night. I mean, I want to talk about C-Ray a little bit, but you saw it last night, just like, so not being able to quite figure out Quantrill in the first few innings. And he did a little bit of some different stuff yesterday with his pitch mix, and C-Ray just kept us right in that game. Unbelievable start from him.
What a guy.
I don't know if you watched the start, but, you know, I was able to watch it in like inside and outside a little bit, where like, when you go inside and you're watching, like, he's just all over the edges. I mean, with every pitch, it's just like everything is kind of not in the middle of the box. Everything's around, but he's not walking guys. You know, he's nibbling, but not in the sense of like he's getting ahead of guys. It's just like he was painting the corners. He's doing a really good job with all of his pitches. And just like, pretty good, man. Pretty good.
That is a good way of putting it. Like, he's nibbling, but not nibbling is like, oh, like you're going to walk some guys because you're trying to get too cute, painting the corners. Like, he just lives on the edges. Like, he doesn't ever, he rarely misses hard of the plate where they can do damage. And he's fun to watch throw, man. I love C-Ray. That's my guy. Let's go. I was going to ask how, whenever you're like out, like you are, like you said, it hasn't happened much in your career, but like, how involved are you in like trying to give advice to guys? Like, if someone, like if PCA is up there and you're like, hey, like he's coming at you with this, like I'm seeing this, like, do you get involved in that way? Or are you more kind of like, I feel like your personality is more like, see if someone asks you a question.
Yeah. I try to be available. I think like the, you know, it's hard to just watch.
Yeah.
And like, you don't want to get in anybody's way, but you want to help as much as you can. So like, whether it's outfield positioning or like making sure, cause say it hasn't played a lot of left field, like trying to make sure and help him and like help with like, hey, this is where I've been standing. This is how I've been moving. Or yeah, like talking to Pete through at bats, like hasn't faced Quantrill much. Like, hey, that cutter kind of plays a little bit, like backs up and has more carry than you think it does, and trying to help through like thought process and where you're looking, like just stuff like that, where you want to be as helpful as you possibly can. And so trying to pick your spots to do that and just be out there and like be a good teammate, I think that's the biggest thing. Just, yeah, you're going to be out there, I'm going to be around.
And it probably helps, like, not like you wouldn't be locked in anyway, but like when you're not playing and you know that there's no chance you go in, like, you know, you'll daydream a little bit and kind of lose like, oh, like what just happened on that pitch? But like thinking that way of like, PCA's at the plate, like let's see how he attacks him here, and then maybe I see something and give him something as next to bat, or any of the lefties or even righties being a switch hitter. But that's definitely something, like you said, that can be beneficial to the team in a way you can contribute while you're on the IL.
Yeah, and I think you can watch and you can learn. Like, there's always stuff to pick up and learn.
Yeah.
And you know, being around the coaches and talking to, whether it's Flash or, you know, the base coaches, outfield guys, just about like everything that's going on, and trying to be a sponge in that way. You know, sometimes watching baseball is healthy for you. Yeah, you get away from it and you get to kind of watch and you see everything that's going on. So as much as you can like take advantage of that opportunity, it probably keeps you in a better mental state than just, it's easy to get poopy pants when you can't play.
Yeah. And that's like you said, like it's, that's the best mindset to have, of like, you can still kind of try to pick up on little things as you go through this time right now, even though you're definitely not happy to not be out there. Like, no one's ever happy to be injured. So, you know, you're going about it the right way. I think I had two topics that I just thought of. You ready for them? First one, Paul Skeens committed to play for Team USA. And the waterfall is happening. Everything's happening. All the big guys are coming in now. And I love it.
Boys need pitching.
That's the biggest thing. I think USA is not behind Japan, but like Japan's pitching is the best. Like, it just is. Like, whenever you watch like the World Baseball Classic or Olympics, like, I don't know if it's Olympics, but World Baseball Classic, like Japan always kind of dominates that aspect. So, and I feel like, again, like we talked about with Judge, the more big name guys that commit, the more other people are going to see that and be like, oh, that'd be sick to go play. Like, so it could be an electric roster. Have you talked to, I don't know, like if he's been invited, have you talked to like Tucker about it at all?
No, but he played in the last one.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they really want him to play in this one. It'll be interesting with like where he's at, how his offseason goes. But like, yeah, I'm sure they want him to go play right field, right?
Yeah. Did you tell Seiya and Shota that you're not friends with them for that month of time?
Yeah, can't be.
Because they are then the enemy?
Absolutely can't be.
Yeah.
It's also like, the last WBC, Shohei was the only guy, right, that was playing in the States and pitching in the States. And on, because
yeah,
Yamamoto wasn't over yet. Shota,
Sasaki.
Roki.
Yeah.
Like, it'll be interesting to see how the teams handle that now.
Yeah, now that they're here.
It's a little bit different now that, like, hey, you're getting paid a lot of money to pitch in the big leagues. Like,
mm-hmm. You also have to think that's to the advantage of the other teams, right? Because everyone else will have seen them a little bit more, having played in the major leagues, having, you know, generally the guys from Japan, their best seasons are the first years they come over. As people get a little bit more familiar with them, they tend to have a little bit more success. Obviously, those guys are incredible. They're still going to be really good, but probably helps to have seen them a couple times in the majors.
Yeah. And that is, it is funny how baseball works that way. Like we talk about it with like rookies that get called up from the minor leagues and maybe they'll start 400 for a week and then all of a sudden they fall off a cliff. It's like there's just waves of adjustment from both the pitching and hitting side. So the more you see a guy and the more data that gets out there on you, like the better teams can adjust.
Yeah. And I think probably the biggest thing for USA is just getting, creating that pitching staff and that bullpen of guys that are ready and willing and available to like go do it. And having Skeen sign up is a huge win for them. You know, hopefully they'll get a few more big starters and be able to like throw out a rotation that just looks silly.
I do wonder, like, do you think he talked with the Pirates before like committing that? Like, hey, like I want to do this. Okay. I didn't know for if sure. It was somewhere he's just like, you know what, if I say I'm going to do it, like the team can't really come in then and look like the bad guy, right? Like I should be okay.
I think he had to have talked to the Pirates and had like a full conversation about like, hey, I want to do this. And then there's going to be, you know, there's going to be limits. It's going to be,
yeah,
they're not going to be like, yeah, go throw 8 innings. That's fine. Yeah.
We're just going to let you go out there and cook, man. Just go ahead. Yeah, and whatever happens, you know,
but I mean, it's the Pirates. Like it's fine. What's he saving his innings?
Man.
There it
Why
is.
Are you always and going there negative? It is. My God.
And now that Tom's going to negative, my next topic is actually one that stinks. The Cabrera injury last night, Tom. That's you hate to see that. Like that gruesome one, like broke his ankle. I want to say ankle. I don't know. I'm not a doctor.
It's like a dislocation and all kinds of things.
Yeah. And that's one where like when you see the trainer come out and immediately like signal for the other team's trainer, it's like this is not. And I mean, you could see his leg. So that's tough. I feel like he was playing pretty well lately. Like had a pretty good start to the season.
I mean, he kind of penciled himself in as that third baseman. You know, he had been a guy the last couple of years who had kind of been trying to find a spot. They tried him in the outfield. They, you know, he'd kind of come up as a utility guy, really beloved among the Yankees community, I would say. He'd come to the John Boy office a couple of times. We had met him, seemed like a really nice guy. And I thought it was interesting. I don't know if you guys saw this, but the first thing he asked when he came to was he asked Judge if he scored the run, which kind of says everything you want to know about the guy. I mean, the fact that like his leg, as you said, is dangling off and he's like, did I score though? Did the run count? So, I mean, tough injury. And I think the thing that you think about is like, how does that affect the team emotionally? You know, that has like a real effect on the team of like, you just saw one of your guys that, you know, he's one of the longest tenured Yankees now. I think he's the second longest tenured position Yankee after Judge. That's active roster since LeMahieu is not currently on the active roster. That affects you emotionally to see a guy like that go down in that kind of way. I think
freak injuries are always, they're almost like a little worse to me than just like whatever, like a normal, like you're running the bases, you pull a hamstring or something like that. Like that happens, like freak injuries like that, where it's like you could never predict that would happen. Like that sucks.
So DJ LeMahieu is close to being back.
He's supposed to come back Wednesday. So by the time people hear this, I think he should be in uniform Wednesday, they said.
Does that mean he's now playing third base?
Yeah, probably. I mean, that he's been a pretty good third baseman throughout his career. There was the question of where he was going to get a lot of reps because obviously first base is pretty blocked. He is at an age where I would have some concerns about him at third base. We'll see maybe a Peraza gets a run over there at third base. I don't know. But, yeah, I do think DJ is going to get his opportunity to be at third base. They're obviously paying him in a significant way, so he'll have an opportunity at least to, you know, this kind of clears the pathway for playing time for him.
In his rehab stint.
He raked. I saw that.
9 games, hitting .444 with a .500 on base and a .593 slug. So we love that. We love that.
I will say, Tom, before you talk bad about him, Scott has talked very highly of LeMahieu. He's also from Michigan. So that's two positives right there. He's from Michigan and Scott loves him. Scott said he's the man, like nicest guy.
Also, he hasn't been healthy for the last couple of years and he's been dealing with some stuff that hasn't let him be himself. Like DJ LeMahieu throughout his career has been absolutely fantastic. He's a natural hitter. He's way bigger in person than you think he is. He's actually a massive human, but he's been fantastic. And so if he's healthy and like has truly gotten himself to a place where he's healthy and can go perform, like could be a huge veteran bat for that lineup, especially when they're in a place where they lose a guy like that. So if he can fill in and be version of himself that he's been throughout his career, like it would be awesome for that lineup.
I should note before, if we move on, Aaron Judge is still over 400. I'm going to give a weekly update. He's still over 400. So could still happen. He could still hit 400 for this whole season.
I did see a stat from MLB, though, that I think there was maybe 7 or 8 guys on the list that have been at 400 at this whatever game number they're at, you know, game 40 roughly, I believe this century. So over the last 25 years. So it's not he what he's doing is obviously incredible. And certainly a lot of those guys are not doing it with the power and the slugging and the on base that he's also doing with it with. But there are some, you know, there are guys who have done this over a 40 game span. I'm still a little wary that he's going to hit 400 over the entire season. But I mean, the fact if he could hit 360, you know, like even if you drop him down to that kind of number, what do the other numbers look like if he hits 360? I mean, that's just you average everything else out. It's insane.
And that's a good point of like he's hitting 400, but it's not like he's hitting like 400 with one homer and slugging like just barely above. Like he's hitting, he has like I think 13 homers too. Like he's 14. He's so good. He's so fun to watch.
He's leading the big leagues in WAR, runs, hits, home runs, RBIs, batting average, on base percentage, slugging, OPS, OPS plus.
He's tied. Bases. He's tied on homers with a good friend, Kyle Schwarber.
Schwaba. Yeah, I mean what he's doing right now is just it's a joke.
Schwarber also has, what is it, a 46-game on-base streak right now that he's on, which is pretty incredible considering his profile as a player. Not a guy that like hits for a lot of average. Obviously, he's always walked throughout his career, but if you'd ask me what's a guy that would get on base 46 times in a row, Schwarber's not in the top 30 guys I would think of.
It is impressive. Like, his OBP is 401, and he's walked 27 times in 41 games. Like, he's impressive to watch hit, too. And he hits the ball – Judge hits the ball very far, but it looks very smooth. I feel like when Schwarber gets a hold of one, there's nothing like it. Like, those things go so high and so far.
Also, like, I would like to ask our good friend Kyle Schwarber just about, you know, he's hitting in the middle of the lineup this year. He's not leading off for the first time in a few years or since he's been a Philly. Mm-hmm. I wonder how that's changed his
approach. Thought process. Like, if he's trying to drive the ball more and like get pitches to hit and kind of drive. I'm not that he wasn't in leadoff spot, but I see what you mean. Of like, if he's hitting in the four hole and there's guys on, it's like, hey man, you're there to hit the ball over the fence. Like, we're okay if you strike out, if you hit some homers.
Or just being like hitting with runners in scoring position more. Like, he's a guy that can drive in runs. He's hitting with guys in scoring position more because he's hitting in the four hole. And just like, if that's changing his approach at all. You know, he's hit, it looks like he has had 9 games in the leadoff spot this year.
Early on, he was the leadoff, but I think since the beginning of the year, they've kind of switched it that I've seen to like Bryson Stott will lead off versus righties and Trey Turner will lead off versus lefties. And Schwarber's kind of stayed in that 2-3-4 range most of the time I've seen.
If you want me to break it down for you, in the leadoff spot this year, he is hitting 200. With a 350 on base and a 543 slug. He's got 4 homers in that spot.
What's funny is that's still pretty good. Pretty good stats.
No, it's really, I mean, the OPS is great. The OPS is great. In the three hole, he's played 6 games in the three hole, 2 homers and 167 with a 286 and a 417 slug. But in the four hole, in the Kyle Schwaba four hole, he's hitting 322 with a 451 on base and a 644 slug.
Yeah, you
know, small samples all the way across.
I'd go ahead and keep him in that four hole though.
Four hole looks good. Four hole looks good on him. Maybe that's and I think traditionally, like if you know, this is last year with the Phillies, if somebody goes and signs Kyle Schwarber, they probably want him hitting it in the four hole.
It's also, I hate to bring up sore subjects here, but it since becoming quite a big Cubs fan myself, it's real tough to look back and see that the Cubbies let him go. Because he has been so good. Like, the past 5 years, he's been incredible. Just
it's a real question of if the DH was a year earlier, would they have kept him? Because there wasn't really a spot for him. But, yeah, I mean, letting him go for free, like, even if you just bring him back and just go, like, we're keeping you, but we're going to, trade you. We're just signing you to a contract so we can trade you somewhere else. Like, letting that guy walk for free is tough.
Because I love him, too. Like, he's such a lovable guy. Like, Chicago has a ton of guys like that, but like even back from that 16 team, like he's up there as one of the fan favorites. So seeing him walk had to be tough.
How about another guy from that 2016 World Series team? We haven't talked about him. I thought we maybe talked about him last week, but now I think we have to talk about him. Javier Baez, he's back?
I've been meaning
Javi
to bring
Baez
him
in
up.
Center field?
I've been meaning to bring him up the last couple of weeks, Tom. I'm glad you brought him up.
I mean, the numbers are great. He's hitting 321. He's got three homers. He's got already 1.1 war this season after being a negative war player the last couple of years and really being statistically one of the worst hitters in the league the last couple of years. And now they seem to have found a spot for him in the outfield. He's been great defensively in center. He doesn't have quite the innings to get us on some of the metrics and stuff, but he's grading out super high. And once he eventually gets that innings, he'll probably be a top 5 to 6 defender out there in center field, which is just insane that a guy this late in his career who's never really played the outfield could go out there and be like, yeah, no problem. I'll be a top 5 outfielder. No, just done. So that's been super fun to watch.
It is cool to see. Go ahead, Ian.
Javi has 4 defensive runs saved, which puts him at tied for 5th in most defensive runs saved among center fielders. You have PCA at the top, Rafaela, Kyle Isabel, Victor Scott are the top 4. And then he's right there with Baez and Tyrone Taylor and like some other good center fielders. It's pretty impressive, man. And that's in 145 innings. Like, he's an athlete that's a good ballpark to run around and play center field. Yeah. There's so much space, but like, man, he's a heck of an athlete. And I don't think the Cubs ever asked him to go play the outfield, but it's just impressive that he's doing that and playing at such a high level, having never done it, but he's so natural.
I think him, the way he's swinging the bat this year too, is also very impressive to see. Cause last year, no real way to sugarcoat it. Very disappointing season. Like, he signs the big contract with them, with the Tigers. When you get that price tag, you got to go out and perform. And he really didn't. Like, I feel like he didn't even play in a lot of their postseason. Or no, he was hurt at the end of the year. I think he had surgery.
I mean, they went on that run after he got hurt last year. Like, it kind of was like when he got out of the lineup, they started to turn things around.
He was someone that was down in like their 7-8-9 hole. And it was like, he was hitting like 180, 190, I feel like. And now I feel like maybe playing center field, like, he just feels rejuvenated. Like, they're a good baseball team. Ian, you know, like, playing on good baseball teams will rejuvenate you as well. Like, playing on bad teams can wear you down. So being on a good Tigers team where he can hit in the bottom half of the order and not really have the pressure to have to like perform and be like the guy that drives in all the runs, and he can just go up there and kind of be free at the plate. It's been cool to see the turnaround he's had this year. And that Tigers team is a fun team.
He really extends their lineup.
Yeah. I think he was in like the 9 hole the other day. He's hitting like 320 in the 9 hole.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just huge to extend their lineup. And, you know, he's playing center field. Center field is a tough spot to get like great production out of. And he's doing that and, you know, hitting wherever they want. It's not like, hey, I'm getting paid a lot of money, I have to hit in the 3 hole and I have to play shortstop. You know, he's doing what it takes to help the team win. And like, obviously a really good teammate. I think that's something that just playing with him, like, he posts, he wants to be out there, and he's a good teammate and he wants to win. And like, he's a guy that helps teams win. And so doing that, like, it's pretty cool to see.
There is something to be said about that. Of like, if a team asks you like, hey, like, you played shortstop your whole career, like, you made some highlight reel plays at shortstop, but it's not really working there. Like, we're going to move you to the outfield. For him to be like, cool, like, let's do it. Like you said, that is a really good teammate move and something like you need in an organization to succeed.
It's been interesting too. Former Cubs minor leaguer Gleyber Torres now there. And there's been some reporting that he kind of got in Javi's ear a little bit and was like, hey, let's get going. And it is interesting sometimes, maybe just you need a reminder of, like, I'm sure Gleyber, you know, you guys know him from his minor Cubs days. Like, he grew up watching the prime Javi Baez and probably was like, hey, man, like, you, that's still in there. You know, like, it hasn't been seen, but it's a good reminder. Sometimes all you need is like someone just to go like, hey, man, like, you're Javi Baez. Like, you're the one of the best baseball players on the planet. Let's act that way.
Yeah.
Sometimes exactly. Familiar faces help too. Yeah,
for sure. And the Tigers are just a funny team because, like, I live in Michigan, obviously, and like, you guys are in Chicago, so you're nearby. But like, I feel like there's really no huge household names outside of like Tarik Skubal, obviously. But like, their lineup is just like consistent, good at bats all the way through. Like, they're—I don't know. There's no like really big superstars. What I'm trying to say,
they can really pitch it.
Oh, their staff is unbelievable. It's not fair. Like, I don't think they've been going opener this year like how they did late last year, and then into the postseason they've been doing five starters, but like their bullpen's disgusting. Their starting five's great. Like, it's Tarik Skubal. Zach was sending stats the other day. He, in Skubal's last six starts, this was as of Saturday, in Skubal's last six starts, he had 50 strikeouts and one walk. Is that good? I don't know. Is that good? 9 Ks, a start, and one walk in six starts. One total walk in six starts and 50 Ks. And you know what? He's a friend of the pod. You've won a Cy Young because of us. You're welcome, Tarik. No big deal. And now he's probably going to win another one because he's disgusting. Have you faced him, Ian?
Maybe once.
I feel like you'd remember because it wouldn't be fun.
But I think I faced him early in his career. I don't think I faced him recently.
I'd say that's a day you might want to talk to Skip and be like, you know what, I'm going to take this one off. Let me take a little rest.
The oblique's
acting up. Like if you play the Tigers in a month, be like, you know, just give me a day here.
Faced him in August of 23.
Oh.
How'd you do?
Over three. Hit two balls hard. Just missed a couple there.
The fact you didn't offer up the information told me there probably wasn't a hit in there.
Some balls hard.
Your face is hilarious. And they're like, 0-3.
Tough game.
It is a tough game, especially against someone like Tarik Skubal. It's even tougher.
Can we talk about a team that's having a tough time right now? The Colorado Rockies on pace currently. And I hate some of the on pace stats because like they're a little ridiculous, but they are currently on pace for 28 wins. They are somehow basically after the White Sox were the worst team in baseball in the history of the sport last year. They're pretty much worse in every single stat this year. I believe they're 6-33 right now. It's tough.
It is tough. And it sucks. I saw like an article because Bud Black got fired too, obviously, and the manager for the Rockies.
Tough spot for Bud Black, though. And so that's clearly not his fault.
That's what the article was said. Like Bud Black didn't fail the Rockies. The Rockies failed Bud Black. Like you could put Joe Maddon as the manager of the Rockies. Like they're not making the playoffs this year. And that's not a knock on the players, but it's just like when an organization doesn't put in like effort to grow the team and like make a contender, like this is kind of what you get sometimes. And the Rockies haven't done a whole lot to try to like build their team.
Our friends at Cespedes Family Barbecue, also known as Backyard Barbecue, wrote an interesting article for Yahoo the other day talking about how they don't have internal metrics on their stuff. So like how most teams have, you know, how they grade out the pitcher's stuff. They don't have anything like that. They don't have any internal metrics in terms of I believe base running. They had a couple different things that like are universal across the board that every other major league team has that the Rockies have not invested in those ways. And it's a tough situation. I think a lot of times what forces organizations to reinvest is fan support, but the Rockies play in a beautiful park in downtown Denver. They're always drawing. They're always going to draw. And so without that pressure of the fans not showing up, I don't know what the incentive is to right now to get the organization to reinvest. Cause clearly most of the people in that organization at the top have been there since the mid-90s, since the founding of that organization. And that's an organization that hasn't won a playoff series since 2007. So at a certain point, something has to change.
I saw that like a week ago. They had like 36,000 at their game. And I was like, that's like
38,000 when they lost 21-0 to the Padres. Yeah.
Like, give them a good product on the field. Come on. Like, if you're getting that support with this tough of a season, like, imagine what you'll get if you contend. It's tough. I'm not going to tell someone how to spend their money, but like you got to, and it doesn't help. Like they've had injuries, like KB's hurt and like stuff.
That's
like
the thing.
That.
They've put money into the payroll. It's not like you can look at their payroll and go, hey, they haven't put any money into it, but they haven't obviously invested it in the right ways. And that's obviously also, to be fair to them, a very difficult market to get pitchers in. You know, I mean, what pitcher wants to sign up to play at Coors Field? That's a tough place to get a pitcher to come to. So that makes your player development even more important. There was some reporting that a lot of people respect their minor league scouting and their college scouting and their high school scouting. They've drafted the right players, but maybe that development hasn't really happened in the same way it might have in other organizations, because the Rockies, to be successful, they're probably going to need to home grow a bunch of pitchers.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what like they're hoping with that Chase Dahlander. He had like a no hitter into the sixth last night. And I think they ended up still losing like 2-1, but you know, that is kind of how you have to go about it. Like, you have to grow some pitching and develop them yourself, and hopefully they can do that. But that's a couple years down the road, so that makes it tough.
That is there a worse thing than when a team have you? I mean, like, I just can't imagine being around a team that's 6-33 at this point, knowing that it's May, you're in the toughest division in baseball, and you have no chance of making the playoffs, and now you're just playing out the string for the next 5 months.
I think two things. One, you're still a professional and you're still playing always for like your next contract and stuff like that. And for like, you never know, like some of these guys could be traded at the trade deadline. So you want to perform to possibly go to a contender or something like that. Two, I want to say it was 2021. The iCubs were real bad. We were like real bad, like 50-100 or something like that. I don't know. I forget how many games we even played. We were like 50-90. Like, we stunk. And it's tough going to the yard, always losing. Like, even in the minors, where it's like, you don't, like, you always want to win. You know what I mean? Like, it's not fun to go home after every game and be like, well, we lost again. Like, even if you go 3-for-4, like, you went in through like one shutout inning, it's like, man, like, losing just wears on you throughout a season. So hopefully they can get like a good stretch where at least, like, you know, guys can enjoy playing baseball. So it will be interesting to see if they compete with that White Sox record from last year. So,
I mean, they're well on their way right now.
I know, but it's a long season. Maybe they get hot. You never know. Maybe they win 33 straight. Who knows? It's baseball. Baseball's a crazy sport.
I just, as you said, like, we've all been around teams enough to know. That's always my biggest fear as a broadcaster, was if you end up on the team that stinks, like, that's just, you got to go out there and every single day you're trying to find something positive to say about a team that's not, there's not many positive things to say. And it's unique in a sport like baseball, because at least in basketball and hockey, where it is a pretty constant everyday sport, there's at least not a game every day, and it's not the constant, oh, we lost again. But when you're struggling like that, and when you're scuttling and you've lost 7 in a row and you have 7 more games coming up on the road trip, that's like when it gets like, man, like, this is just not, we're all having a bad time, and it wears on you and you feel it.
Yeah. The year I played in Lexington, I want to say we lost either 13 or 14 in a row. And it literally got to the point of past like anger and stuff where we were like, guys, we got to find a way. Like, we got to win one. Like, this is brutal. Like, it's just, no one's having fun when that's going on. So, you know, it is what it is.
Ian, do you have any memories of any really bad teams that you played on?
I feel like Ian's never been on a bad team. I feel like he's one of those guys that's just always a winner.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely struggled in, you know, the second half of 21. 22 was a tough year. 22, I think, I mean, we didn't lose. We lost 90-ish games. Like, it was tough.
But what about, like, Cincinnati or summer ball or anywhere? Oh, yeah.
Cincinnati, we were bad. We were really bad. But it is like, you go and you try to find a way to you kind of do your own thing and invest in your teammates. I think that's like the biggest one is, you know, we lost 91 in 21. We lost 88 in 22. So like, it's not like the worst ever, but definitely hated it. We had a 10 game losing streak that turned into the trade deadline in 21. That was really, really tough. So, yeah, I mean, you invest in your teammates and you try to get like as like day to day as you can. I think that's the biggest thing. Like, it's just day to day.
College is different too. Like, you're just playing with like a bunch of your best friends. Like, you still want to win, but it's not like your job and it's not like your livelihood. So it's not, it maybe doesn't crush you as much. And like you said, Tom, you're typically only playing like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, maybe like a Tuesday, Wednesday game. So like, you have a break in there where you can kind of decompress, be like, all right, it wasn't just 7 straight days of us losing and just being miserable. So you get some breather in there at least. I think that definitely helps.
I think that's the biggest thing is like, I remember I'm always fascinated by like long losing streaks and stuff, because I think like the ability to keep showing up in situations like this, like I give everyone in the Rockies credit, because like, that is the hardest thing in the world to be. It's May 13th. You know, you're not making the playoffs. You know, you're at this point, really the only thing you're playing for is to not be the worst team in the history of the sport. Right. I mean, that's like the biggest incentive the Rockies have at the moment. And to play that out is really hard. But I always think about like St. Peter's baseball in the MAC in division low end division one lost 77 in a row at one point over 2 straight years. lost, went 0-38 one year, opened up the next year 0-39, and then won two of their last three against Iona. And like, I always think about stuff like that. You're like, how did a team win two out of three after losing 77 in a row? Like, you got to give them some credit. Like, after you lose 77 in a row, I'm rolling over. I'm dead. I'm not winning two out of three. The fact that they're able to find the energy to be like, hey, you know what? We're going to go to Iona and take this series. That's actually something impressive about that in a way to me.
You know, you just got to keep grinding. And you know what, Ian? You know what I bet St. Peter's was wearing when they won those two games?
I think they were wearing Bruce Bolt's. BruceBolt.us. Go to BruceBolt.us and get your signature series batting gloves today. Arm sleeves, elbow guards, shin guards. They sent me a really nice Mother's Day package that I wasn't able to wear, and there was a lot of cool pink stuff. But BruceBolt.us, go check it out.
Is Pete a Bruce Bolt guy?
Pete's been messing around with it.
Because I saw it the other day, and I was like, I didn't know he was wearing them.
Are you going to get him in trouble for saying that? Or
Nope.
Okay. Nope. I didn't know if he had a deal with someone else. I was like,
Tom said it, not me, Tom.
I mean, he was on camera. It wasn't like he did this in like the back cage. He wore them in the game. I wasn't like I was viewing something illegal.
Tom's like, hey, I saw him in the back cage with a pair of Bruce Bolts on.
We're gonna put Tom in a pair of Bruce Bolts during the live show.
Yes. Ian, you could have wore like a pink arm sleeve and like pink eye black on Mother's Day and just sat in the dugout, but that's, you know, it's not really, that's more my personality than your personality. That's something I would do if I was on the bench. I'd be like, all right, not I'm really going me. All out.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about the corresponding move for Ian Happ going to the IL is a guy we talked about, Moises Ballesteros, getting called up to the major leagues for the first time.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
And obviously, Cade Horton made his debut on Saturday. So
yeah, let's talk about Cade. Yeah. Cade, that was awesome. Cade,
what'd you think of him, Ian? I watched the game, but what'd you think? Like pitch, I mean, you saw him in spring too. That was the first time I'd really like watched him throw.
Yeah, I hadn't really seen impressive. Him a ton in spring. You know, I don't know when he threw in spring. I hadn't seen
probably on the road when you weren't there.
Well, no,
it's a good point.
I think he came out of the pen once. And then I don't know how much he started in spring because he kind of got a late start with everything that happened last year, whatever. But dude, he was great. I mean, Keller did a great job of throwing the first and getting through the first. And then, you know, Cade, a little bit of a different routine there coming in the second inning. And he was awesome. Four innings, he went 77 pitches and did a great job with the, you know, commanding the four, staying in the strike zone, couple of jams there that he got out of. You know, there was one pitch, Beatty was hot that series. There was one pitch that Beatty took advantage of. Wasn't a bad pitch. Wasn't like a hung middle pitch. It's just probably for that guy in that situation. Probably, you know, he made a good swing at that pitch. But like, dude, he was in the zone. He was competitive. Didn't let the moment get too big. He was really aware of what was going on. And so pretty impressive stuff.
Especially in New York.
For him to come up and fill in for us, and like, you know, he's going to be a part of this for a long time. So great first start, and like all the things that you want to see are there, especially the dominating the strike zone part of it. So the fastball is good. It's got real cut to it, and
yeah,
pretty interesting metrically. And then you know, we have the two breaking balls, and like he's going to keep getting better. I think the cool thing about our staff too right now is just we have some veteran guys who have great routines in JMO and Boyd and C-Ray. And so being able to have both Cade and Ben Brown kind of follow and learn from those guys and spend time with them, I think is huge. And so, yeah, I'm excited for his next outing.
What is the horizontal on his fastball? Because I literally saw it and I was like, that's a cutter.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what it is. I'm going to have to get back to
that. It's got to be like...
Let me talk to the analytics department on that.
I just figured you were in the dugout. Maybe you saw it. I would have to guess it's got to be... Here's my expert prediction. It's six. Yeah, I'm going to go six.
He's also been working on a sinker. They've added a sinker to give him another pitch. So that's been something that he's been also throwing as of late that maybe you might be seeing as well. I also think you got to imagine that IH8 was first day not in the lineup on Saturday. He played the first 39 games of the season. I think he probably wasn't in the best mood. You know, he probably wasn't looking at the scoreboard and trying to see the horizontal break on stuff.
And that's why Dakota knew better than to text IH8 the day of.
Dakota, he's thrown those things anywhere from -2, -3 to at the most six.
Oh, I'm going to give myself a little bit of credit there. I was close.
I would say the most of the scatter would be in the 1.5 range.
Well, I mean, that's a true, like, a true cutter is like right around zero to negative one. Like a typical four seam has a little arm side. So the fact his is moving glove side even more so, like it looks like a cutter on TV to me, to my expert eyes. My second question was, why do you know why they went with an opener? I was curious. I saw that and I was a little confused just because I didn't know if he'd done that in the minors and like that's a whole different routine. So
no, I didn't get
they didn't read you in on that decision. I just meant more like if there was something said in the media and I missed it of like I said, coming in the second inning versus starting a game as a starting pitcher, like two completely different routines, warm up wise and like preparation wise. So obviously it's not something they sprung it on him an hour before the game, but it was just something where I was like, oh, it worked out, but I was interesting.
Yeah,
I think it was simply just to try to avoid the top of that Mets lineup, which is really lefty heavy and pretty nasty.
I think also if you're asking, you know, his pitch limit was going to be somewhere between 75 and 85 pitches, you know, just based on what he had done before. So if you're asking him to get through the lineup a couple times, having him only have to face, having him not have to go through those first three guys three times, you know, was probably the thought process, but I was super impressed.
I'm by no means second guessing it. I was just more curiosity, you know. I'm a ball head. I'm a seam head. I love the game, man. I'm just curious what's going on.
I've always thought of you as a seam head.
That's what people think of me.
Was listening to Trevor May talk about some of the unwritten rules of baseball and some of the interesting things about like locker room stuff, and just wanted your guys' thoughts on what are some things that fans may not know about but are like very classic, like, oh, everyone in baseball knows this. Like he was talking about that in clubhouses, the veterans get the corner lockers and they get the extra locker next to them. Stuff like that. Are there things like that that I think most fans probably wouldn't know about, but you guys are like, oh yeah, that's like, I've known that because this has been the culture I've been around for the last decade.
That's a really good one. I, funny enough, became a veteran of the Iowa Cubs, not so much a veteran. So I always got the corner locker in Iowa just because when you're there for like 4 years and me and Scuba Steve, the clubby, good pals, he would literally text me before we would even fly out of Arizona and be like, I got your locker set up. Like it was my locker every year because I was there so many times. But that's a good one. And then same thing for like on bus trips, like Ian, you know, especially in the show, you explain it to me in the show. I feel like in the show, there's a lot more rules than in like the minors. And the minors, there's not a whole lot of like unwritten rule stuff. Like the first thing that came to my head, I don't know why this isn't really an unwritten rule, it's more of just a human being rule, is like wear shower shoes. Like that's one, like if you got kangaroo court going and you're not wearing shower shoes, like that's just gross to me. But I wouldn't say that's really an unwritten rule. That's just like a, you know, be a human being.
Yo, in Japan.
Yeah, I do feel like the majors has more stuff because it's also like there's more hierarchy in the majors of like, oh, this guy's a 12-year vet, this guy's new to the team. Like in the minors it's a little different, I feel like.
Yeah, like I heard Cade Horton got to New York, Ian instantly put him in a headlock and gave him a noogie. And he goes, welcome to the show,
the pink backpacks, all that stuff. Go get him Starbucks.
In Japan, you know, the shower shoes thing is the opposite where you're not supposed to wear shower shoes. You wear them to the shower, and then because everything is clean there, you take your shower shoes off when you get into the shower.
Well, I'm guessing their shower isn't the same as a minor league ballpark shower that has gum and dip and pee and everything else in the like drains. Like I'm dead serious. I wouldn't shower if I didn't have shower shoes. Like, no. I wouldn't have showered. I would have wore, like, three pairs of socks and gone in the shower.
Yeah, I would say...
That's a really funny image in my head.
I would have done it.
The locker thing is a good one. I would say on the bus or the plane, you know, the veterans definitely choose their seats first. I think every team is different, too, on, like, sometimes the veterans sit in the back. Sometimes the veterans like to sit above the wing because, like, there's less turbulence. Like, so I don't know. It depends, but yeah, I would say that like in our bus, I would say the veterans for the most part sit more towards the front of the bus and the younger guys sit more towards the back of the bus.
It's tough when it's like spread out, like you and Tucker might like the back of the bus, but like Carson Kelly and Dansby and Nico, like the front of the bus. And then as like a rookie, you come on, and you're like, all right, like, where am I not going to get killed for sitting? Like, just tell me where to go and I'll go there.
Yeah. There's a lot of questions asked. That's for sure.
And that's what Alec Mills told me that like years ago when we were in Iowa. He goes, I'll be honest with it. He goes, the most stressful part of the big leagues is like doing all the right things in the locker room and on the bus and on the plane. He's like, the easiest part of it is playing baseball. He's like, everything else is so stressful because you're like, I don't want to be that guy where people are like, oh, look at this rookie, like thinks he can do whatever he wants. He's like, no, I just don't know where you want me to go.
Yeah, probably like don't get a haircut like right before the game is another one.
Mm-hmm. That is a good one because there are times when like guys are going out to BP and like a guy's getting his haircut finished up and it's like, dude, come on.
What are you doing? I think most people know about like the bullpen backpack.
Mm.
That like,
you can explain it. Though. I think you can like, explain it.
Me explain it?
Either or somebody.
Go.
Come on, bullpen guy.
Okay, I'm a bullpen guy. I'll go. Usually the rookie carries like a backpack with them, like from the locker room out to the bullpen. And it's typically like a pink one. Like it's supposed to be like embarrassing type one that holds whatever guys might want out in the bullpen, like baby powder. Gum, like anything like that.
Seeds.
Yeah. Like literally any.
Yeah. I mean, some teams still do like a, you know, Dora the Explorer backpack or something. Yeah, like we have like, I think ours is like a camo, like a nice camo backpack. It's not like anything embarrassing, but it is like kind of a, like if you have a young guy in the bullpen who's like, you know, a year in or half a year of service and like they're the youngest or the least tenured guy and they're carrying the backpack out. Like when another rookie gets caught up or a young guy gets caught up, it's like, whew,
I'm safe.
The backpack guy now because you gotta like you gotta stock that thing every day. You know, you gotta make sure that it has all the things. If you get out there and Presley really likes his, you know, original seeds, but you didn't put any original seeds in there, somebody's paying the price. So you gotta stocking that thing every day. It's probably a stressful job.
Which made me think two other ones. One, I wouldn't even say this is unwritten. It's kind of more written. Like especially in the show, it's no shorts to the field, especially on the road, I want to say.
Yep.
And then the other one is like the beer bag for the planes. Like the rookies always like stock the bags with beer and bring it onto the plane for everyone else.
Yep.
So basically, and any unwritten rule is really just like, and it's nothing like bad of anywhere near hazing, but it's like the rookies just do the things that
I'd say this. It's definitely a lot better than it was probably 30 years ago. I think it's much easier to debut right now than it is at any other point in the history of baseball.
It's nothing where you're like, oh, I can't believe I have to do this. It's just like, ah, like, yeah, I'm the rookie. Like, I got to do it. Like, it's more just like harmless. Like,
initiation. I loved my rookie job.
Yeah.
I carried
what was your rookie job?
I carried John Lester's speaker.
Of course JBL you loved speaker it.
For 2 or 3 years, and I loved it.
You loved it because you became friends with like the only person that everyone would be afraid of getting mad at them, and you knew he'd never get mad at you.
And it got, and I got to carry the speaker. So I didn't have to get the beers or anything because I was on speaker. But then I got to go to the back of the plane. So like I would carry the speaker. John would want it in the back of the plane. I would take it back there. Sometimes I'd get to sit back there with Lack and Lester and those guys. And
if you were good, if you behaved well that day, they let you come and sit in the back of the plane. They're like, you know what, Happer? You did good this week. You can sit with us. And you're like, yeah, cool. Yeah, so like what wine you guys drinking? Yeah.
And there was one time I forgot to charge the speaker. So
So then you sat with the coaches.
So I had it plugged in to the outlet in the back of the plane. And like the outlet wasn't like completely working and charging. So it would play for like 10 minutes and then it would go out. And I'd be like standing back there trying to like plug it in and get it close enough to them to where they could hear the music. It was really tough.
How nervous were you when you realize it's dead? You're like, oh no. Oh no.
I was like they're going to open the emergency door and I'm going to be out.
It is a good point though, Tom. Like a lot of the unwritten rule stuff now, it's more just like playful stuff. Like it's nothing where you're like miserable and it's like, oh, I can't believe they're making me do this. Like it's all in good fun.
Yeah. Let's get the people to Sloan Screen Time. Sloan is the world's leading manufacturer of commercial plumbing systems at the forefront of the green building movement. The Sloan flushers are all over Wrigley. Go to Wrigley, take a look around. Go in the bathroom, take a look around. You know what you're gonna see? Sloan flushers.
Went to my first game yesterday. Saw C Ray nearly 7 innings, 6 2/3. Great start.
Go.
What are your screen times?
4 hours, 8 minutes.
2 hours, 58 minutes.
You got a 151. You got a 151. It's going to be a W.
It's just been a guarantee like the past 2 months of Ian's first, Tom second, I'm third. And that's okay. I can live with that.
That's episode 258 of the Compound Podcast presented by Parse Rum. Go to Bandy's, get your Parse. Go to musicboxtheater.com. Grab your tickets for the live show May 31st, 7 p.m. We will see you next week.